present We the People.
Good evening, everyone. This is Gabriel Heater bidding you welcome to We the People for Grape Nut Flakes and Grape Nuts, the only breakfast cereal to bring you one delicious flavor in two delicious forms. Tonight on We the People, there's an 84-year-old sea captain from Maine who's come to meet a 26-year-old girl sea captain from Virginia. You'll meet a little jitterbug singer who's come here with her uncle to ask your help in settling an important argument. And here, too, is a woman who shared her husband's relentless struggle to conquer one of our country's worst diseases, pellagra. These and many more. Experiences you hear only when we the people speak. A few days ago, a 14-year-old boy in Boston, Massachusetts, wrote a letter to our listeners' radio committee. And he said, "Oh, I know a lot of people ask for time to tell their stories on We the People. But please, won't you let me tell mine? It's very important." Well, the committee thought it was important. And that young boy is here at our microphone now. His name is Philip Bayonne. Go ahead, Philip.
"I am a newsboy. I always wanted a little dog. The only trouble was I didn't have no money to buy one. But one day about a year ago, I was standing on a street corner selling my papers. And a little dog came up to me. He wasn't any special kind of a dog, sort of like a shepherd dog, white with black and brownish spots, and a little stubby tail. He came right up and started licking my hand. That night he followed me home. I was scared Mom would let him stay. But once she saw him wagging his tail, she said, 'Bring him in.' I fixed up a place for him right next to my bed so he could be near me. Then I named him Flusky. After Flusky had been with us a few days, he knew just when I should get up, and he woke me. Right after breakfast, we'd go to work together. And if I had errands to do, I just left my papers on the corner, and Flusky watched them for me. 2 Sundays ago, Flusky was out with me like he always was. We were just starting home when a green automobile came whizzing around the corner. I stepped back just in time, but the auto went right over my little dog and kept on going. I ran over to where he was lying. He was still alive. He barked a little and looked up at me. He even licked my hand and tried to wag his tail like he wasn't hurt at all. But a moment later, he died. I try not to think about Flusky anymore, but I can't have any fun because I miss him. And every time I see another kid with his dog, I think of Flusky and me. The man who killed Flusky didn't even stop to help him because he didn't think a dog means much. But he was wrong. I wish all you people who drive cars would be careful. A dog means a lot to a fella. My dog was the best pal I ever had."
"You bet. Philip, we can't give you back Flusky. But there's another dog here that I imagine looks very much like your little dog did. We got him for you especially. I hope he'll be just as well a pal for you as Flusky was."
"Gee, thanks, Mr. Hader."
Our Grape Nut Flakes next guest is a very beautiful young blonde. Her name is Ann Barrett, and she's from Ambridge, Pennsylvania. Now, she and her uncle, whose name is Swing Swartz, have had quite an argument. They've come to We the People tonight to ask your help in settling that argument. So, Ann, well, I'm going to turn this microphone over to you, and suppose you carry on from here.
"Well, Uncle Twing is the important uncle in our family. Uncle Twing and I have been arguing because ever since I was a kid, I wanted to go to Hollywood and be a famous swing singer. Uncle Twing always said I was wasting my time. Didn't you, Uncle Twing?"
"I sure did. I think you'd be better off getting married, settling down in Ambridge and raising a family of your own. And forget all this Hollywood glamour stuff, like the rest of the folks down our way. I know you're cute and pretty, but that's all."
"That's not true, Uncle Twing. Because when I went down to Texas with a dance band, Vincent Lopez heard about me. And he drove all the way over to Baton Rouge to listen to me. And last October, I signed a contract with Mr. Lopez. He says I'm going to be a big star. How about that?"
"Vincent Lopez just hired you because you're cute and pretty. He just wants to look at you."
"And Uncle Twing, now I'm singing at Leon and Eddie's. the big New York nightclub. And big crowds come in there every night. How about that?
They just come in to see the rest of the show.
Uncle Twing, you're just stubborn.
I still think you should be singing lullabies down in Ambridge.
Well, I'm not going to take your word for it. Mr. Heater said I could sing something here tonight so that the listeners could decide. And Uncle Twing, maybe you'll change your mind. You can brush me off like you would a speck of powder. You can try, but you can't brush me off. You can shut me down. You can yell, but I'll yell louder. You can try, but you can't brush me off. You can say you're out, but I'll keep phoning. You can tell me goodbye, or you can tell me that I won't go. No, you can leave me cold like you would a plate of chowder. You can try, but you can't brush me off. You can lock me out like frightened farmer's daughter. You can try, but you can't brush me off. You can drop a hint, but I won't take it. You can tell me sad news, or I intend to refuse to go. So you can take me back like wood and lead and quarter. You may try, but you can't brush me off.
And that was wonderful. Now what do you think of her, Uncle Swing?
I still think she's just cute and pretty.
Oh. That song you're hearing, ladies and gentlemen, is called An Apple for the Teacher. And that naturally makes us all think of school days. Yes, they'll soon be back again. Any morning now, children will be trooping up the street with their book bags and ready to dig into their autumn work. So now, more than ever, those youngsters of yours need body-building meals, good food, and especially a good breakfast.
Yes, sir, breakfast is the most important meal of the whole day because no youngster can do his best work without a nourishing start in the morning. And the breakfast of Grape Nuts Flakes gives him a swell start. You see, Grape Nuts Flakes are different from most other cereals. Instead of one grain, they're a blend of two. Sun-ripened wheat and malted barley, two of nature's most wholesome, nourishing grains. That's why every helping of Grape Nuts Flakes and milk provides such a wide variety of natural food elements. It brings you three essential vitamins. Vitamins A, B1, and G. And in addition, you get carbohydrates, iron, proteins, and phosphorus. A mighty fine breakfast for your growing children. The kind of a breakfast that will see them through to lunchtime feeling grand. So ask your grocer for Grape Nuts Flakes in either of the two convenient packages, the big new Kate Smith Economy package of 12 ounces, or the handy 7-ounce size, which costs only a dime. And once you've got acquainted with Grape Nuts Flakes, you'll understand why it's the fastest-growing breakfast cereal in America today.
The people's next guest is a young color taxi driver here in New York who has a small strip of gold paper pasted on his license card. And there's a story behind that little strip of gold paper. A story that began late one night when the driver and a woman passenger were riding north to 135th Street here in New York. The taxi driver stopped for a traffic light. Two men stepped out from the shadows at the corner of the street, and one of the men called,
"Hey, driver."
Sorry, boss. I already got a passenger.
Come on, this is a stick-up.
You can't hold us up like this.
Shut up, lady, and you won't get hurt. Now get out of the car, both of you, and fast.
Hold the gun on him, Joe. Now, let's have your first lady.
Oh, please, don't take it off.
Shut up and hand it over. There. Now you, what have you got?
Here, $2.
Look at his pockets.
Okay. Oh, a wallet.
Yeah, and you ain't getting it.
Wise guy, her trying to hold out on us.
Mister, that's my week's wages. You try to take it, you're going to have to shoot me.
Okay, wise guy, you ask for
it. You can't shoot a man down like that in cold blood.
Once more, you're going to hand it over?
No. No, I ain't.
Let him have it, Joe.
No, you don't.
Ladies and gentlemen, the colored taxi driver who was held up that night is here to tell you the rest of his story. And why that piece of gold paper is in his cap.
His name is William Ballou.
All right, Bill.
Just before the man pulled the trigger, I grabbed his arm and yanked him toward me. I hit him with my fist hard as I could, and just before his gun went off, the bullet went through my shoulder. But that one punch of mine knocked the man out like a light. The fella started to run. My shoulder was bleeding bad, but I ran after him. When I caught him, I held him with my left hand and smacked him with my right. I knocked him cold. Then I got the cops. They arrested those two criminals and sent them up the river for a long stretch. My arm healed up in a few weeks, and I never thought any more about it. Then one day I got a letter from the police department telling me to be at New York City building at the World's Fair the following Wednesday. I didn't know what to make of it, but I went there. Some other cab driver was there, too, and a lot of people on the platform. I heard my name called out. I went up to the platform. The city officials were there. They told me the story of what I had done. Then they gave me an award for helping the police. That's what that strip of gold paper in my cab is. It says committed for public service, and I am mighty proud of it. A lot of folks think us cab drivers are just out for what we can get. That ain't so. We look out for our passengers all the time. We want them to be safe riding in our cabs. We try to help the police every way we can. And when we can help get rid of crooks, I can tell you we are mighty proud of it.
You have every right to be, Bill. Well, I wish you could all see we, the people's next two guests, ladies and gentlemen. One is a tall, powerfully built man, 84 years old, with sparkling eyes and a flowing mustache and a weather-beaten skin. And the other, well, the other's a girl. She's slight, 26 years old, and probably weighs about 90 pounds. And she's very much the type of person you'd expect to find working behind a desk in an office building. But both these people are sea captains. The older one is Captain Pat Taylor of Eastport, Maine. The younger is Captain Darcy Grant of Gloucester, Virginia. Well, Captain Pat, suppose you start off.
Well, Captain Grant, I have sailed the seven seas for 50 years, seen whirling dervishes in India, firewalkers in Tahiti, and marriage march in Arabia. I've seen wonders in every corner of the globe, but I have never seen a real-life sea captain woman.
Well, you're looking at one right now, Captain. I was master of the 78-foot deep-sea schooner, the Fanny Inslee, and I make my living running lumber on Chesapeake Bay between Tidewater, Virginia, and Baltimore. I guess that makes me a deep-sea captain, doesn't it?
Deep enough for a woman, girl. But that's hardly a spit in the wind. To a man who's been around the Horn and sailed the South Seas, seen, well, we won't go into that. Tell me, lad, whatever possessed a little girl like you to take up with the briny?
Well, if you'll heave to a minute, Captain, I'll tell you. I've always wanted to be a sailor, ever since I was a little girl. But instead, I ended up with a job in an advertising agency. I worked there until I couldn't stand being cooped up any longer. Then last year, they fired me. I had some money saved up, so I drew it out of the bank, bought the Fanny Inslee, and turned into a captain. So you see, Captain, I'm learning now what deep-sea sailing is. What's more, I've even got a shipwreck to my credit already.
Shipwreck in a pond like Chesapeake Bay?
It's a pretty big pond. As you know, Captain, it's a good rough stretch of water.
What kind of a cargo were you carrying?
No cargo. I was bound south to pick up some lumber.
Lumber?
On my way.
Lumber? You should have seen the cargo, kind of cargo I once took from London to Sydney, Australia. Back in the old days, the cargo of ladies. The prettiest lot of charmers a man could ask for. We call them the marriage ships simply because the ladies was going out to get it. They hoped. When we got into Sydney, every bachelor in the countryside came out to look them over. A man would say, "What brings you to Australia, girlie?" And she would say, "I've come out to look for a job." He'd say, "How would you like to be my wife?" Next thing, I'd send for the parson. He and all the young couples would come up to the booby hatch, and there the parson would marry them. One ring was all we had, but it served. And I saw many a beautiful marriage come out of those weddings aboard of my ship. But here, lass, we're off of our course. You were at the helm. What was it all you were saying?
It was about the time I was shipwrecked.
Well, go on, take over.
We were bound south, Miss Fanny Inslee, to Holland Point, Virginia. The third night out, we were beating into a southeaster. The mate was just bringing her about when the centerboard jumped 6 feet over the deck. We'd run aground on a shoal. I sent up distress flares till I ran out of them. Then I took an oil lantern and dumped a bottle of cerise nail polish over it.
Nail polish on a sailing vessel?
Yes, sir. The nail polish made the oil lantern red, and I hoisted it in the main rigging for a distress signal. For 9 hours, that surf pounded the Fanny Inslee, and at last she opened a seam. We made water fast then, and soon the ship was sitting on the bottom, water over her deck. We spent 5 days on the cabin top until eventually the Coast Guard came and towed us to a shipyard. Can you top that, Captain?
Well, I don't like taking the wind out of your sails, girl. But it took more than nail polish to save us at the time I was wrecked in the Lombardy Straits off the coast of Java. All of a sudden, the ship heaved straight out of the water and rolled and tore around like the devil himself was at the helm. 14 hands jumped over the side from fright, but the rest have stood by till the morning. There was pumice stone floating all around that told the story. We'd run smack over a submerged volcano just as the volcano erupted. One of the boys swam a quarter of a mile to rig up a bitches boy, and the rest of us got to shore. So take my advice, girlie. If you ever get over Java way, watch out for those underwater volcanoes.
Aye, aye, skipper. And the next time you sail, take along a bottle of nail polish. You never can tell when it'll come in handy.
Well, thank you, Captain Darcy and Captain Pat.
Well, when are married people most likely to quarrel? Now, you or I might think that a hard question to answer. Ah, but Grape Nuts Flake's next guest says it's an easy one. Her name is Alice Wade Robinson. She's the well-known writer and authority on domestic problems. And her articles appear in newspapers and magazines all over the country. All right, Mrs. Robinson?
From the thousands of letters I receive, I've found it's the little things that cause the most quarrels. The husband who just won't put the cap back on the toothpaste. The wife who is always late. Late for dinner dates with her husband. Or late getting up in the morning to help him off to work. For it seems that early morning is a critical time in any home.
Well, you mean everything is apt to seem wrong with the world when you first get up.
That's it, Mr. Heater. But the right breakfast can go a long way toward curing the trouble. The man whose wife smiles at him across an appetizing breakfast will carry a warm picture in his heart for the rest of the day.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Robinson. And ladies, you'll find that a breakfast of Grape Nuts Flakes truly is downright appetizing. Pour out a helping of those delicate, toasty brown flakes, cover them with milk and sugar and sliced bananas or fresh ripe peaches, then watch your husband go right to it, enjoying every malty-rich spoonful. For Grape Nuts Flakes have an utterly distinctive flavor, rich and mellow and sweet as a nut. It's a blend of two luscious grains, sun-ripened wheat and malted barley. And that's why it's so unusual and satisfying. And you can enjoy this one delicious flavor in two delicious forms. Grape Nuts Flakes, crispy brown flakes, and Grape Nuts, tempting crunchy kernels. So give your husband a fine day's start. Start his day the Grape Nuts way.
If you went up to the second floor of a certain house in Biloxi, Mississippi, you'd find in a bureau drawer a large black notebook with the word diary stamped on it. You'd see the name of the man who kept that diary, Joseph Goldberger. An unfamiliar name. But if you read the words Joseph Goldberger wrote in that book, you'd be reading one of the most thrilling chapters ever written in the progress of man. For Joseph Goldberger was a doctor. And on June 16th, 1914, he wrote these words.
There are 300,000 people in America who are suffering from pellagra. I know there are thousands of pellagra victims in Mississippi, Arkansas, Oklahoma, throughout the South. But it never struck me so keenly as it did today. I was at the home of a sharecropper. Six small children were sick in bed, their bodies wasted, their little arms covered with the same telltale blotches I have seen so often. The red blotches that mean pellagra. One of the children died while I was there. I could do nothing. But now I'm determined to conquer this dreadful disease. I have made my headquarters at the county orphan asylum, where dozens of children are ill. I have made countless tests. Yet I am still as far as ever from knowing what causes pellagra. It seems hopeless, but I must go on. Yeah. September 21st. All but three children in this asylum have pellagra. It's been a long day, but I can't go to sleep without noting the amazing thing that happened tonight. I was sitting in my study when I heard a noise in the kitchen adjoining my room. I saw three of the children standing there drinking milk. When they saw me, two of them ran away. But I stopped the third one and talked to him.
Tell on us, will you, Doc?
No, but tell me, Billy, do you three boys do this every night?
Not every night, Doc, but, well, we like milk, and nobody ever gives us kids any, so whenever we can, we take it.
I see. And the other two boys, which ones are they?
Paul and Jimmy, Doc.
Paul and Jimmy? The only two besides you that aren't sick.
Yes, but Doc, you're not mad at us, are you?
Mad? No, Billy, I'm not mad. You have given me a great idea. September 22nd. The only three boys in that whole orphanage that didn't have pellagra were boys that drank fresh milk. Could it be that pellagra was caused by not eating the proper food? It seemed so simple I didn't dare believe it. But I made plans today to test my theory. I decided to give a special diet to a group of healthy men, none of whom had ever had pellagra, to see what might happen. A diet such as most pellagra victims live on. I went to Rankin County Prison. I was taken into a cell block crowded with prisoners.
Quiet, men! Quiet! Dr. Goldberger has something to say to you.
Men? Most of you are serving life terms. But I am here today to say to you, if you're willing to take a chance, in 6 months you'll be granted a full pardon.
Are you trying to
kill
us?
What do you mean, chance?
What do we have to do?
Yeah, what do we?
I'm making experiments to find a cure for pellagra. And I want volunteers to help me. For 6 months, I want those volunteers to eat nothing but fat meat, molasses, and meat.
Meat and molasses?
Yeah, sounds all right.
Wait, what's the catch, Doc?
The catch is that you may get pellagra.
Get pellagra just from eating meat and molasses? You're crazy, Doc.
Maybe I am. But what do you say? Will 12 of you volunteer?
Sure, I will.
Yeah, take me.
Me too.
How about me, Doc?
Yeah. November 29th. The public does not approve of my experiment. People don't understand, and they're trying to make me give it up. Newspapers are attacking me. Men are making speeches against me. They say that I am torturing the prisoners. Even the prisoners themselves are on the verge of rebellion. I doubt if I can continue my experiment much longer.
Just for once, can't you change the prisoner's diet?
Oh, impossible, Warden. That would spoil my whole experiment.
All right, Doctor. Do you want to examine them now?
Yes. Let's go in.
Yeah, why don't you give us something?
Isn't that great, Dr. Goldberger, the expert on pellagra?
Give us some decent food for change.
Yeah, give us some milk or vegetables.
All right, men, quiet. Quiet. Now line up for examination.
Hold out your hands. Next. Give me your other hand. Next. Warden, look!
What is it?
Look at this man's wrist.
Why, the skin's red and blotchy.
Yes, Warden. This man has pellagra. Now the world will have to listen to me. And that, gentlemen, is my report on the cause and prevention of pellagra. Oh, gentlemen, please. This is a serious matter. And as members of the medical board, we must treat it seriously.
Dr. Goldberger asks us to believe that 300,000 hard-working men and women here in the United States have pellagra because of improper diet. We know pellagra is caused by a germ. Dr. Goldberger's experiments are a failure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear the rest of the story from Dr. Goldberger's wife, Mary Goldberger. Grape Nuts Flakes have brought her here from Biloxi, Mississippi. All right, Mrs. Goldberger.
When my husband came home from that meeting, I'll never forget the look in his eyes. He said, Mary, they wouldn't believe me. The only way I can prove to the medical world pellagra isn't caused by a germ is by injecting the serum of a man dying from pellagra into a healthy person. I'm going to inject it into myself. I believed in my husband. I knew his proof would be stronger if more than one person took the serum. I said, very well, Joseph, but you must inject me, too. The serum was injected. My husband and I waited and waited, but no sign of pellagra ever appeared. That last experiment proved my husband was right, that pellagra is not caused by a germ. 18 of my husband's colleagues in the public health service helped him in his wake, and the world owes them credit. But my husband was not content to stop there. He went everywhere, trying to help people get the kind of food they needed. Often he came home exhausted, sick at heart. I remember one night he wept as he told me of a family he'd just seen, a family too poor to buy the proper food. I knew how he felt, but I begged him not to work so hard. I told him he couldn't stand it. He wouldn't listen. Finally, he collapsed. 3 months later, he died. Today, my husband, Joseph Goldberger, is recognized as one of the great men in medical history. Naturally, I'm proud of that, and I'm glad I was able to help him. My husband devoted his life trying to conquer a disease that's still causing thousands of deaths in America. It's up to us to continue the work he started, to stamp out pellagra forever.
We the people speak. Next week at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear the Cinderella story of a little 13-year-old girl who sang her way from street corners to Hollywood stardom. You'll meet one of the pilots who risked his life to make the first official airmail flight. And you'll hear the strange story of a man who discovered the lost city of the monkey gods. These and many more. Experiences which reveal the drama, laughter, and thrills of real people. Wouldn't you like to appear on this program of We the People? Perhaps you've had an experience you'd like to share with other people. Then write about it to the Listener's Radio Committee. You may win a free trip to New York with all expenses paid by Grape Nuts Flakes and Grape Nuts to tell your own story when We the People speak.
This is Harry Bonzell saying good night. And for a good morning, eat Grape Nuts Flakes.
Here's good news for radio listeners. Thursday night, day after tomorrow, one of radio's most entertaining programs returns to the air. Yes, it's the Good News program, starring Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, Dick Powell, Mary Martin, and Meredith Wilson's music. Consult your local paper for time and station. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.